Hit it. How? How you feel, brother?
Feeling good.
Carlos Frias to Maxwell. Swinging a high drive to left. Ethier back. It is out of here. Into left center field. I don't know, two pitch. And the Giants take the lead 4-2. Justin Maxwell wasn't supposed to play today, and he has just broken the tie. The pitch to Belt. Belt hits a high fly ball to right. Puig back. Puig back. It is off the top of the wall and out of here. Brandon Belt hit one a mile high. It just would not get out of the air. And the Giants now lead 6-2.
Now back to Talking Baseball with Marty Lurie. Follow Marty on Twitter at Baseball Marty. Now here's Marty Lurie.
Boy, when did Chavez Ravine turn into the launching pad? Did they put up the fence at 250 feet again? My goodness, the ball flies out of there. All right, Phil Rogers joins us, a senior writer for MLB.com. And Phil, a long storied career covering baseball. Nice to have you with us on this Father's Day, Phil.
Yeah, what is going on out there in the West Coast, ball flying like that? I haven't figured it out. I don't know. I've been there with the Santa Ana winds. The ball didn't fly. What's going on this year, Mike?
Well, I think it is a little bit of warm weather that's happening, and I think someone once told me that hitters don't hit home runs, pitchers throw home runs. And I think that's part of it as well. But that's always been a, you know, and also it's the pitching staffs. You know, we think of the great Dodger pitching staffs. They didn't give up many home runs. Maybe this pitching staff is a little bit, home run prone.
Yeah, that sounds to me like a Roger Clemens interview you're remembering. I remember talking to Clemens once. He'd given up a home run to Gino Petralli of the Texas Rangers. And when I talked to Clemens afterwards, his line was, well, I think I supplied the power on that one.
Yeah, I think that if you watch enough MLB.com and you've been terrific on there. I love seeing you on TV as well. But you watch the home runs, Phil, I tell you, or the big hits, the ball is right over the plate. I think that's a story of hitting. Get a good pitch to hit and don't miss it.
Yeah, and, you can't write this every day. You can't say it every day. People get tired of hearing, but, the story of slumps, the story of hitters that are really locked in. You know, Barry Bonds, a classic example of this, when he was at his best, swing at strikes, take balls.
Yeah, boy,
it gets, you can't simplify it. And you watch all the hitters who struck out crazy amounts throughout the year, and, the guys that can't lay off the slider in the dirt, year in, year out. Sam Sosa was the guy in Chicago that was just like that. He could get him out on that slider outside, all day, throwing something in his zone and whack.
Well, Pence is a lot like that too. And now he's adjusted where he can get that pitch. But you make a mistake to Pence, and you don't put that slider away, he can hurt you. That's the story of these power hitters. Phil, yesterday we had an amazing game. That was Max Scherzer. And I was lucky enough to be on the air with John Miller doing our talkback section of the pregame as Tabata got hit by the pitch. And we just, John and I both exclaimed, he put his arm out. You've been out at the ballpark. Obviously, you're in Chicago. What was your take on that play by Tabata? Does he get stigmatized for the rest of his career, or is it just an instinctive play by a hitter, or just a bad pitch?
Well, we'll see how the dialogue goes in the next week or so, and that may play a role in it. But I think he catches a big break because Scherzer, in his interviews after the game, wasn't making a big thing of it. I think to some degree it's up to Scherzer. But I remember the Bartman play in the 2003 playoffs in Chicago. Dusty Baker, Moises Alou, those guys right after the game all said the right thing. It's a fan, the ball's in the stands. We got to make the plays, we can't melt down after that. And then as time goes on, it kind of gets rewritten. So we'll see if the instant reaction stays the correct one. If so, I think Tabata gets a break because Scherzer did not make a big deal of it. I think that's probably the way he would react every game, every situation. And I'm not really sure that a hitter is supposed to make an adjustment because a guy has a perfect game on the line. Now, if you tell me he only did that because he's had a perfect game on the line, I would think that's different. But you got a guy that up there in a two-strike count. He's wearing the old Barry Bonds, Craig Biggio elbow guard. And, you know, I just think when, you know, it's probably been part of his approach at the plate, certainly a two-strike approach. If a guy throws one in there and he can get out of the plate appearance with a hit-by-pitch, he's going to do it. So I think it was within the framework of the way the game is played today. But no question, he dropped his elbow into it. He hit himself with the pitch.
Well, you know, you look at some of the pitching in the National League, and, you know, really, I know the All-Star game's coming up, and you've covered it so many times. This National League pitching is getting a little scary, you know, up and down the line, and National League's always had some pretty good pitchers. But you get a guy like Scherzer and Garrett Cole, Greinke, Shelby Miller, DeGrom, Walker, people like that, Jason Hamill and Cole Hamels. It looks like the old National League pitching staff has come back.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Many of the guys you mentioned are young guys who were developed. You know, Madison Bumgarner always been a giant. But I think in the bigger picture, I think we're seeing a shift in power from the American League to the National League. And, you know, I don't know how long it's going to last. But, you know, I think the fact that every free agent pitcher that comes up now wants to leave the American League for the National League is an issue for the American League teams. You know, you look around, even the teams that have money to go out and get free agent pitchers, you know, John Lester wasn't going to go there. He was going to go to a National League team, you know, and I think that's pretty much true across the board. And I think it's smart business. You know, I mean, Greg Maddux, I think, was the first guy that I knew of this ilk. You know, the Yankees, rather, made some runs to try to get him. There was no way in the world he was going to go to the American League. And privately, he would tell you, hey, do you think I'm stupid? You know, I mean, you know, it's not just pitching to the pitcher, but it's pitching to the number eight hitter.
Yeah.
And all the other advantages that come with it. It used to be the umpires. Now that has equaled out with the with the centralized umpiring pool. But you know, it's still, you know, you get the we talked about the home runs at Dodger Stadium, and maybe the conditions are changing. But you know, you get that National League West. I mean, compare pitching there. You know, to just about any other division in baseball, and you know, I think there's a reason it's produced all the Cy Young winners. That, you know, all the conditions favor pitching, and you're right. But as long as the Royals bring their bullpen, the American League will have a chance. You know, I think they could get through the first four innings and then turn it over to the Royals bullpen for innings 5 through 9 in an All-Star game, and they could be okay.
You know, you joke about it. Phil Rogers with us, MLB.com, a senior writer. Always a pleasure to talk some ball with Phil. But, you know, the Tampa Bay Rays the other day started a reliever. And then they brought in a pitcher for four innings. And you know how the numbers people are always making an impact on the game. And maybe you do that. You know, honestly, it's a quality start, 6 innings, 3 runs. Maybe a quality start will go to 4 innings, 2 runs, and turn it over to the bullpen after that. That could happen.
Well, and, you know, I think that's really smart what they did the other day because, you know, they were their quote-unquote starter was a guy they had brought up to the minor leagues, and they weren't going to be able weren't really looking for more than about 4 innings out of him. And you bring a guy in to start like that, he's not going to be able to get a win, but he can get a loss. And you do him a huge favor by letting him get in the third inning or something where he can, you know, have more control of the outcome of the game as far as the win and the loss goes. How about Terry Francona the other day after the rain delay?
Yeah.
Tie game, bases loaded, 2 outs in the 5th inning, and it was rain delayed, and he brought his closer in to get the out. It was Miguel Montero hitting for the Cubs with 2 outs in the 5th inning. And Francona went to his closer right after the rain delay. He knew he had to take his starter out, but he just went on that analytic idea. You know, the biggest outs of the game are not always in the ninth inning, and he thought this was the one. I got to stop him right here. And he left Cody Allen, his closer, in to pitch the sixth, and then got him out and, you know, wound up closing with the setup guy and got a one-run win. So, you know, yeah, I think we are seeing a lot of different kind of thinking by managers, or I think it's kind of the outside baseball wondering of, hey, why do you do that? You know, the pitcher's batting eighth. You know, you're seeing more and more managers. Joe Maddon's done it every game this year, except the ones he's managed with the DH. You know, every time he's had a pitcher, he's hit him eighth. And, you know, we saw La Russa experiment with it. And, you know, now I think you're seeing games played where both starting pitchers are hitting eighth.
Boy, amazing. Phil Rogers with us. I'll close on the on this subject, on the relief pitching. I've never seen bullpens have a bigger influence on the game than we're seeing now. And it goes back to the Kansas City. You could trace it back to La Russa with Eckersley and Rick Honeycutt and Gene Nelson. You know, the specialists. You go back to Earl Weaver with Grant Jackson and Eddie Watt and people like that. But this thing now, where they're now in the fifth inning, why not bring in your guy, save the game right there? You know, the save can happen any time. But the power of these bullpens, and you know, you used to knock, you couldn't wait to knock the starter out, get his pitch count up, get him out in the fifth inning, get into the bullpen. Sometimes now you don't want to get into the bullpen. So my point is, I don't, Phil, I'll tell you, I don't know if I've ever seen a year or a couple of years where the bullpen is as strong determining a game as it is now.
Yeah, and it definitely, another one of the things stacked against hitters like the shifts, you know, you see, you know, nine-man bullpens. The Cubs at one point this season had a 14-man pitching staff, and it included only four starting pitchers. So they had a 10-man bullpen. That was in either late April, early May, and that gave them three players on the bench, a backup catcher, and as it turned out, two outfielders. They had no backup infielder, and they did it for a weekend and really got by without it being a big deal. But you see teams, if they think they might be thin on pitchers for a game, they'll fly pitchers into the big league city just in case they need them the next day. And sometimes these guys fly right back to AAA without ever being activated and put in a game. I think that's part of it, too, is that constant roster churn. You know, I mean, it used to be, you know, the pitchers could be day-to-day. We're going to see how this guy goes. But now, unless you're an all-star caliber pitcher, as soon as you have a tell somebody you have a tweak, you're going on the DL, and they're getting fresh armed guys in, and you know it's,
I did. I called
amazing.
It gets a little tiresome. You know, the Texas Rangers last year used 64 players, including 40 pitchers.
Yeah.
And granted, they had a ton of injuries, but you know, it was nice when you know a team would use 35 players all year, and the fans could know all 35 players.
Yeah. Good luck. Good luck. Now you got to know the whole farm system before you can figure out anyone. Phil, another thought I had today, and that the trade deadline is coming up, and we hear Cole Hamels every day, and the Dodgers are reeling right now. I got a feeling they're going to do something this week, either minor league call-ups or something, because they've really struggled. But Jeff Samardzija interests me, and I know we see all these columns all the time of potential trades. Tell me about the White Sox. Are they in a selling mode? And is Samardzija someone that you like? And I think he fits out here pretty well. He was here last year on the other side of the bay. But if the Giants wanted a righty, I still kind of like him. And people are starting to link him up with the Giants. Tell me about the Sox and also about Samardzija.
Yeah, let's go Samardzija first. He's an old school kind of guy. He's like Rick Rushel with better stuff. I mean, he is rough around the edges. There's no, you know, you don't see him going to the video room. You don't see him inventing new pitches. You see him coming at you with what he's got. And, you know, what he's got should be a mid-90s fastball. At times it can be a little bit in, you know, move toward the high 90s. This year, most of the time, it's been 93, 94. And he has a really good I don't know if he actually calls it a split finger pitch or a slider at the bottom of the strike zone, that, you know, he can pretty much be a two pitch guy when he's commanding his fastball and throwing strikes, getting ahead. But he's just an old school. He had one of the most impressive games I've seen this year when he had absolutely no stuff, but he held Cleveland scoreless for, I think, 8 innings, and he was doing it with 91. Mm. But, you know, he was just coming at guys, and I think that has appeal. You know, I do think that makes him a good match for Brian Sabian. He's a little Jake Peavy-like, but I think he's, you know, there are much fewer questions. You know, the Peavy went there end of the career, late in the career, questions about his health, questions about his stuff. Samardzija is kind of the same kind of a guy, a gunslinger like that, but he's better pitcher's build, and he's really been lightly pitched because he was a reliever for the first 3 or 4 or 5 years, even with the Cubs in the farm system. And he was a guy that took a while to get really to the big leagues. You know, he had been a football, baseball guy, so that might have slowed him. So I think there is a thought he has a lot left, a lot of bullets in his arm, and he just comes right at you. The White Sox are a tough read. They don't score any runs, and I don't really see anything you can point to say their lineup is suddenly going to get good enough to be a playoff contending lineup. They made their offseason moves, and they were aggressive with free agents, rebuilt their bullpen with David Robertson and Zach Duke, based on the theory that they were going to win a lot of games 3-2 and 4-3 with a rotation of Sale, Samardzija, Jose Quintana, and the kid Carlos Rodon. It's been a double whammy. They haven't pitched as well as they thought they would, and their lineup has just been death. Melky Cabrera, you know, is back to being the guy who was with Toronto 2 years ago before he had this benign tumor removed. It's like he doesn't move well. Adam LaRoche has been a big disappointment. He's very Adam Dunn-like again. I mean, he's a threat to hit a home run, but he doesn't really help you at bat to at bat. And, you know, so I don't see that their lineup is going to get fixed. They have a lot invested, and I would not blame them for giving it another 5 weeks to see how it comes together. But it's Rick Hahn, the GM, uses this. Is the first guy I heard use this verb, wish casting, when you make a forecast based on your best cases and your what you wish would happen. And this feels like a wish cast to me, to think they can get back to contending. And if they don't, they would like to keep Samardzija long term, I think. Maybe they make him the best offer. He seems determined to get to free agency. So, to me, he is a guy that will be traded, Marty. And, you know, it could be sooner rather than later, but all signs are that they still want to give it some time to let maybe Jose Abreu will just go on a tear and can carry that lineup, and they can make a run back first to 500 and then start talking about being a contending team.
Well, we're at the point now in the season that, you know, there's 90-some-odd games to go. You got to do it within the next 3 weeks, and that sort of falls in line with the trade deadline. If you don't do it in the next 3 weeks, you get it to 60 or 70 games and you haven't made your move yet, you're done. You got to show some life before that.
I haven't done this yet, but I'm getting very close to writing a column for MLB.com where they should be open to every trade possible, including even Chris Sale. I think they're not going to win until they get some young hitting in their system. And, you know, they do have, you know, there are teams, a lot of teams out there looking for pitching, and they have young pitching that would be of tremendous value. And, you know, I think, you'd hate to see Chris Sale be traded if you're a fan of that team, but I just don't know to what end is keeping Chris Sale on a team that's not going to score runs and is going to be 2 or 3 years away from being put back together to where they can challenge the Royals. The Twins are getting good in the division. The Indians are going to be consistently good. So it's not going to be an easy division. And I didn't even mention Detroit. So you know, I think you can make a good case for trading anybody on that roster.
All right. Hey, Phil, great to have you on this Father's Day. Enjoy the day, and always enjoy talking ball with you. And we follow you all the time on MLB.com. So I appreciate you being on.
Thanks very much, Marty. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, that is Phil Rogers, MLB.com. And talk about a Hall of Fame baseball writer. This guy will be in Cooperstown one of these days. All right, more coming up right here on KBR 680, the sports leader.